Vice President Lenny Robredo joins the race for Malacañang. We'll discuss this development with Isambayan convener, former Supreme Court Associate Justice Antonio Carpio. More senatorial aspirants launch their certificates of candidacy a day before the deadline of filing. The National Telecommunications Commission looking into the pro-Bongbong Marcos text alert. The spokesman of the Commission on Elections, James Jimenez, will join us later to tackle this issue. And senators belittle President Duterte's threat to have them arrested if they cite government officials in contempt. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Topping the midday news, challenge accepted. Philippine Vice President Lenny Robredo has decided to join the 2022 presidential race. Robredo had been mum about her political plans amid growing clamor for her to seek the presidency. But in a speech this morning, Robredo says her decision to run was not merely because she was pressured to do so, but out of her desire to change the current administration's incompetent leadership.
Buong-buo ang loob ko ngayon. Kailangan nating palayain ang sarili mula sa kasalukuyang sitwasyon. Lalaban ako. Lalaban tayo. Inihahain ko ang aking sarili bilang kandidato sa pagkapangulo sa halalan ng 2022. Malinaw sa lahat ang hamon na kinakaharap natin. Nakita na nating lahat ang pagsisinungaling at panggigipit na kayang gawin ng iba para maabot ang mga layunin nila. Nasa kanila ang pera, makinarya, isang buong istrukturang kayang magpalaganap ng anumang kwentong gusto nilang palabasin. Pero hindi kayang tabunan ng kahit na anong ingay ang katotohanan kung parehong uri ng pamamahala at pareho ang pagkatao ng mga magwawagi sa araw ng halalan, wala tayong aasahang pagbabago.
The race to Malacañang is getting crowded. Robredo now joins Senator Panfilo Lacson, Senator Manny Pacquiao, Manila Mayor Francisco Isko Moreno Domagoso, and the late dictator's son, Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. But Robredo is unfazed.
Maraming nagugutom, naghihirap at namamatay dahil sariling interes at hindi kapakanan ng Pilipino ang number one priority ng mga nasa poder. Ang kawalan ng maayos na pamamahala ang ugat ng ating maraming mga problema at ito ang kailangang wakasan. At kung gusto nating tunay na makalaya sa ganitong sitwasyon, hindi lang apelyido ng mga nasa poder yung dapat palitan. Yung korupsyon, yung incompetence, yung kawalan ng malasakit, kailangan palitan ng matino at mahusay na pamumuno.
The Magdalo Group praises Vice President Robredo's decision to run for president. Former Senator Antonio Trillanes IV says the group will help Robredo win the elections and pull the Philippines out of its current state. The Magdalo Group has repeatedly urged Robredo to run for the country's highest office. Trillanes even told Robredo he would run for president if she decides not to. A political analyst tells the public to scrutinize the track record of presidential bet Bongbong Marcos to see if he is fit to run the country. Attorney Tony Lavinia, the former dean of the Ateneo School of Government, says apart from defending his father's dark regime, it's also unclear where the son of the late dictator stands on key national issues.
It's a name. It's a family. It's not Senator Marcos, because he doesn't have a record to speak of now. 5 years he has been silent. 5 years he hasn't said anything except in his protests. Had no public life. As a legislator, he botched up the Moro organic law. That's why he lost heavily in the Bangsamoro areas, because he didn't deliver a law that was attuned with what was needed by the region. So, yes, I think his competence can also be questioned.
Lavinia believes Marcos will need to form an alliance with a formidable election bloc like the Dutertes for him to win. He also says he wasn't surprised when President Rodrigo Duterte backed out of their supposed tandem.
Natalo na siya noong 2016. No? Si Imelda natalo noong 1992. So alam natin na the Marcos loyalist vote, while substantial, is not strong enough to win. The vice presidential race is over. I mean, this is not about the polling. This is simply about Tito Soto, as always, a top-notcher senator in all these 20-plus years. The three campaigns is that. I mean, you know, it's just a given that's going to happen, in my view. I had forgotten about that until the last polls came out, and you could see that, well, it's still Tito Soto. That's why President Duterte will no longer run, because he knows he'll be defeated by a landslide.
It's the second to the last day of the filing of certificates of candidacy for the 2022 polls. Today's early filers include former Vice President Jejomar Binay and opposition stalwarts Shell Diokno and Neri Colmenares, all seeking Senate seats. Our correspondent Ina Reformina joins us live now from the Sofitel tent in Pasay with the latest. Ina, over to you.
Yes, Casey, we're now on day 7 of the filing of certificates of candidacy and certificates of nomination and acceptance. And that is correct. One of the early filers today is a former vice president and sixth-term Makati mayor, Jejomar Binay, of course, a lawyer and a human rights advocate. Binay filed his COC just around 30 or so minutes ago, but he did not address the media, Casey, did not issue a statement after the photo and video opportunities. He left the venue, also filing his COC for senator. This is his third attempt. This former Bayan Muna representative, Neri Colmenares, also a lawyer and human rights advocate. Now, Colmenares said that he will legislate for mass testing, mass COVID-19 testing, and free hospitalization, things which the Duterte administration did not legislate, he said. He also said that he will push for job security. Colmenares, Casey, hit Jeffrey Ka Eric Celis of Abante Sambayanan party list, who also filed the CONA for Abante Sambayanan this morning. He's Abante Sambayanan said that it vows to put an end to the conspiracy of the CPP-NPA-NDF. And Celis there said that the progressive party list, including, of course, members of the Makabayan Bloc, are not really fronts of the communist movement, but in fact, and I quote, CPP-created and CPP-led, end of quote. Now, Colmenares' response to that, Colmenares said he is hoping that the 19 billion pesos 2021 and close to 30 billion pesos 2022 budget of the NTF-LCAC is not and will not just be used by government to put up party lists such as Abante Sambayanan. And also incidentally, Bayan Muna party list filed its CONA this morning, and returning Bayan Muna nominee Teddy Casino also lambasted government for what he calls its attempt to dislodge genuine sectors and marginalized sectors in Congress by putting up party lists such as Abante Sambayanan. Now, another filer today is Attorney Chel Diokno, another human rights lawyer, educator, and also a returning candidate for senator. He said that the certainty of punishment is what stops and prompts. It's what stops crime, which is why he will push for strengthening the criminal justice system. He said that he will also push for equal social justice for all. He said that he will work towards ensuring that justice is accessible to all, especially those who cannot afford it. Of course, he is chairman of the Free Legal Assistance Group that has been giving free legal assistance to indigents for 30 years now. Now, President Duterte used to talk about Chel Diokno's teeth. Diokno is taking this to his advantage. And in fact, his battle cry is for this election is kay Chel Diokno may ngipin ang batas, meaning to say with Chel Diokno, the law has teeth. Now, another senatorial aspirant, Casey, who filed his COC is Carl Balita, broadcaster Carl Balita, who's also a nurse, a midwife, an entrepreneur. He's running under presidential aspirant Isko Moreno's Aksyon Demokratiko. He's offering his experience in working with quality organizations to help uplift the plight of the vulnerable sectors. And he said that one of his primary concerns, of course, is how we can rise from the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, for party list, several party list filers have already filed their CONAS this morning, and more are still in line here at the venue. I mentioned a while ago, Bayan Muna party list already filed its CONA. Also, we noticed, Casey, that because of the COVID-19 pandemic, we're seeing more party lists now advocating and representing medical frontliners and the health sector. So for one there, we have Nurses United, which filed its CONA also today. And just to give you a tally, Casey, as of yesterday, we already have 41 presidential aspirants, 9 vice presidential aspirants, 63 for senator, and 125, that's 125, for party list. Casey, that is the latest from the COMELEC Filing Center here in Pasay City. Back to you.
Thanks a lot. Our correspondent, Ina Reformina, there joining us live from Pasay City. Take care, Ina. Keep safe. And focusing now on our top story today, Vice President Leni Robredo has accepted the challenge to run for president. Let's get the reaction on one of the conveners of opposition coalition Isambayan, former Supreme Court Associate Justice Antonio Carpio. Justice, good afternoon to you and thank you for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Carmina. Thank you for having me.
All right. Your group, the opposition coalition Isambayan, you got yourself a presidential contender. What in the vice president's declaration speech resonated with you the most?
Well, she said that she will fight to the last breath. She will stake everything that she has in this election. And I think that's the sentiment of everyone. We will fully support her. We will stake everything also because the survival of the nation is at stake in this election.
Justice, you know, I've interviewed you a couple of times and I haven't seen you smile this much. You can't stop smiling.
Well, of course, we're very happy that VP Leni has accepted the challenge, has accepted our endorsement, and she's on her own. We need to throw our support, full support, so that she will win in the elections.
What do you say, though, to the observation that it's going to be just about the Marcos narrative here? It's got to be more than that, according to some. What's your take on that?
It's not only about the Marcos narrative. That's an important narrative. We have to remember what happened during martial law, because there was corruption and there is corruption again now. And there is violation of human rights again now. So it's important to remember what happened, because what happened before is happening again. And we cannot be having these convulsions every now and then. We can never move forward if we keep on encountering violations of human rights, corruption, plunder, which is happening again. We have to put a stop to this.
Justice, where do you go from here? And first of all, did you find out, like the rest of us, only at 11 o'clock today as well, that she was going to throw her hat into the race? Or did you know even before we all found out?
Well, I was informed yesterday only that she would make an announcement.
Hmm. And what was the first thing that went through your mind when you heard about it?
Well, I think I said then we have to move on. We have to organize. We have to put all our efforts in this campaign because we all agree that the survival of the nation depends on the next election.
So where do you go from here when you say you're going to move on, you're going to organize? What exactly will that picture look like?
Well, we have formed chapters all over the country. I think we've covered, we have over 50 chapters now all over the country. We plan to have one in each town and municipality, in each city and municipality. We have chapters abroad in places where we have OFWs. And this is a digital campaign. This will happen online. And we have to prepare for that also.
How do you know then, and how are you preparing, that whatever reaction that you get, given that it's mostly going to be an online campaign and online organizing, that it's true, that it's real, that there are real people behind every show of support that you get?
Well, of course, we know that the Duterte group, they have their trolls and these are fake people but they also affect, they also deliver messages, so we have to counter that. We will ask our volunteers to also be digital warriors, because we have a lot of volunteers right now. We have about 3 million members in Isambayan. We plan to convert a huge number of them into digital warriors.
Hmm. Justice, I'm sure you listened to every word that the vice president uttered earlier today. How important was it for you when she said that this is not all about her political ambition?
That is correct, because from the very start, she was prepared to give up the running for president just to unite the opposition. So it's not about her. It's about bringing back for us. It's bringing back good governance, putting an end to corruption, putting an end to violation of human rights, putting an end to extrajudicial killings, and putting an end to this foreign policy of giving away our maritime zones to China.
There was a point in her speech when she said, "Ang nagmamahal dapat ipaglaban ang minamahal." How do you think this will resonate? You're smiling again, Justice. How do you think this will resonate with the voting public? And what kind of message do you think this is giving the voting public?
Well, I think you can feel that, because everyone, every citizen who loves our country must fight for our country. Every citizen who loves to our country must defend our country from foreign aggression. And every citizen who wants good governance must fight for good governance. So if you love our country, you have to fight for the country that you love. That's basic.
This fight, though, she cannot go it alone. Yes, she's counting on supporters. But what about her vice presidential, the vice presidential bet? Where is the group regarding that?
Well, they have already agreed on a VP, but I cannot disclose it. It will be known at 4 p.m. today. We had a consultation with her on who should be the VP, and they have agreed on the VP already.
Tell us about, I respect that if you don't want to say it, but tell us about the consideration that went into deciding the VP for Vice President Leni Robredo as she guns for the presidency.
Well, because from the very start, we said that once we have chosen the presidential candidate, she will have a big say on who will be the running mate and also on who will be in the ticket, in the Senate ticket. And we will discuss it with her. And in the case of the Isambayan, we told her who will the choice of Isambayan, because actually we had only one candidate who qualified, because there was only one candidate for VP who accepted the Isambayan process.
And that's Senator Antonio Trillanes, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And is the choice of the VP outside of the process?
Well, it is within our process, because we said that when it comes to the rest of the slate, we will have to decide it jointly with her.
Mm. No, but the choice that she made, because eventually it was her choice, correct? It wasn't the group's choice.
Well, it was her choice, but we agreed to that process, that she could make her her choice, because that's part of our process. I cannot disclose who.
Yes, but her choice is apart from your process. Let's make that clear.
No, correct? Her choice is not what we recommended, but under our process, she can nominate somebody else other than our choice.
I take that to mean that it's not Senator Trillanes. So I'm going to ask you the next question. Is the choice of the vice president outside of the so-called echo chamber?
Well, I don't know what an echo chamber would be. I think we have to wait until 4 o'clock this afternoon. Thank you.
Is the choice of the vice president, does that sit well with the opposition group? And for what reasons?
Well, we have to understand that once you choose your presidential candidate, she has a lot of leeway to choose his or her running mate, because that's his or her team. And from the very start, we acknowledge that. That's why we decided first who will be the presidential candidate. So all the rest will follow.
All right. Did she tell you, or what did she tell you about why she chose this vice presidential bet that she is going to run in tandem with?
Well, the choice actually was a consensus among everybody that she consulted.
All right. What did she give you any particular reason why eventually this is her choice?
Well, I could see the reason for that, because you have to look at the, of course, the contribution of your vice president, whether it will you have to think of also the regional balance. You cannot get a candidate from your own region. So there are many factors that go into this decision.
And Justice, do we know this vice presidential bet as someone who's been in public service or in the public eye?
Yes, of course. Not choose somebody out of the blue.
Right. Woman? Man?
We'll just wait.
But you're happy with the choice.
I'm happy with the choice. I think we have a very strong team.
Where does this leave Senator Antonio Trillanes now, Justice?
He will lead the Senate slate.
Mm. And were you able to talk to him after?
I have not been able to talk to him, but from the very start, he said, I'm offering myself to run as president, vice president, or senator. I can take either, any of the three. From the very start, he was upfront with that.
All right. And finally, as I said, I'm going to respect you not sharing with us the name, but what makes you think that this is going to be a formidable tandem?
Well, there's a regional balance. Both of them have won public offices. They're incumbent government officials. So I think we have a good team. We have a strong ticket.
Are you reaching across, did you reach across the fence here You said the person is an incumbent, a government official. Has this person declared or filed a certificate of candidacy in recent days?
Not yet. They will file at 4 p.m. today, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's not from the other groups that eventually you decided to form an alliance. It's not
no,
that.
No, it's not. It's not.
All right. I'm going to leave you now and let you
Thank
be.
Thank you. Yeah, you're narrowing everything.
As I said, I'm going to respect you for that.
Thank you.
A former Associate Justice Antonio Carpio, thank you so much for being candid enough. Thank you for joining us today. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a break now up ahead. The emergency alert message that supposedly promoted the presidential bid of Bongbong Marcos raising eyebrows. Stateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. We are back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Vice President Lenny Robredo joins the race for Malacañang. More senatorial aspirants launch their certificates of candidacy a day before the deadline of filing. The National Telecommunications Commission looking into the pro-Bongbong Marcos text alert. And senators belittle President Duterte's threat to have them arrested if they cite government officials in contempt. The National Telecommunications Commission investigating an emergency alert message seemingly promoting the presidential bid of Bongbong Marcos. The text alert containing Marcos's initials and the hashtag BBM2022 was received by several people around the same time Marcos filed his certificate of candidacy for president.
We suspected that it may have come, although this is not yet conclusive, it may have originated from a portable cell site, a standalone portable cell site. This portable cell site can only be used during emergency. So in this particular case, it is used, there is no emergency. So the use of this is illegal if proven to be coming from portable cell sites. Proven, then they can be penalized under existing laws.
The National Disaster Risk Reduction and Management Council has said it is not responsible for the text blast. It adds emergency text alerts are supposed to be sent out only during actual emergencies. The camp of Bongbong Marcos denies they had anything to do with the pro-BBM text blast. They're even calling it a part of a demolition job. Marcos's chief of staff, attorney Victor Rodriguez, says the late dictator's son would never resort to such an underhanded campaign tactic.
The better question should be, why should the public believe that it came from us? Just like you and most of the Filipinos, I want to know, we want to know, Bongbong Marcos wants to know who is behind this sabotage, because he did not take this sitting down. After filing, we were having lunch. He told me, can you please check kung sino ang nasa likod nito? Sapagkat hindi dapat dinalaro ang napaka-useful tools such as this, even if it meant to promote his candidacy. His numbers are doing very, very well. And we have a lot of common sense in our team. We will not do such a thing to undermine or to undercut all the gains that we have been getting after all the hard work this past few years, this past few months, especially this past few weeks.
House Deputy Minority Leader Carlos Zarate not buying Marcos's explanation. Zarate calls it a very lame excuse.
At this point, let's speculate. No? The Marcos camp will speculate. The people will also speculate, but the fact is there is now an attempt to hijack this process, no, and undermine in general, the electoral process.
Duterte is calling for changes to the Election Commission's guidelines for substitution. He believes a Marcos-Duterte tandem is still on the horizon. He says that Dutertes may still make a move for the country's highest post before the deadline for substitutions on November 15th.
It would be made very, very strict, no? Because there are really a situation that there is a need to substitute. For it should be limited to the fact that a candidate dies, for example, or incapacitated, but not just because a candidate suddenly withdraws. No, if he withdrew his candidacy, then that's it. No, he should not be allowed to be replaced by anybody else.
For its part, the Commission on Elections says there are currently no laws penalizing candidates for using emergency channels for their campaigns, similar to the pro-Bongbong Marcos text alert. Well, for more on this, we'll now be speaking to COMELEC spokesman, Director James Jimenez. Director, good afternoon to you and thank you for joining us today.
Good afternoon and thank you for having me.
All right, what happened yesterday was sort of like a preview of what's to come. Do you consider this portentous of things to come and how interesting this campaign season will be?
Oh, certainly. We expect that a lot of these new methods are going to be rolled out for the campaign as they struggle to make up for their lack of in-person campaigning. We can expect more of these tactics, which is pretty disturbing if you think about it.
Why do you say so?
Well, this is an emergency alert system. I mean, what happens when people start ignoring these emergency alerts, thinking it's just another campaign propaganda? It is a very disturbing thing to be doing, and we hope that the NTC, as you reported, is investigating it and will get to the bottom of it as soon as possible.
Are you in on the investigation, Director?
Not at the moment, no, but we are going to be reaching out to the NTC so that we are apprised of the progress of their investigation.
So then how do you then safeguard the voting public? This is just one tactic that we saw yesterday. And as you said, many more tactics can be used because as well of the ongoing pandemic.
I think it's clear that this recent episode makes it abundantly clear that enforcing election laws isn't just something that the COMELEC can be expected to do by itself. Especially with the way things are interconnected now, particularly when we talk about information and communications technology, obviously we are going to be needing the help of other agencies of the government. In this case, for example, the NTC. Admittedly, this particular tactic is catching us flat-footed. It's not something that anyone ever expected would be done. But we have to be flexible and we have to move fast. We have to understand that this is the new playground, that this is the new arena for these campaigns, and we have to move accordingly.
Flexible, moving fast, in what direction? How exactly are you preparing to combat all these tactics that will be used?
Well, we need to get in touch with the people who are in charge of these communication channels and then understand how these things work. For example, I don't know how you can get on an emergency alert system, right? All this time, I'd assumed that it was just the NDA, which is the National Disaster Risk and Mitigation Council, that could do it. But obviously, now apparently, there are ways of mimicking or aping this sort of transmission. And we have to be apprised of all of these things as soon as possible. One example, though, not as critical at the moment as this particular episode, is the use of e-wallets for vote buying. Again, you're looking at a traditional mode of fraud, but being applied to modern techniques. Mm. And we're working to head that off by talking with the companies that provide e-wallet services. So we need to do the same thing in terms of communications now.
Imagine that kind of a tactic being used in this time of the pandemic when we know that a lot of people have no money in their pockets.
Exactly. So you can see immediately how it could be very effective in terms of reaching out to the voters. But it's also very important to understand that it would be against the law. And we would look, you know, our laws would be illusory if we were to let that go. So we would have to really make efforts to head that off.
How difficult will that be for the COMELEC, considering that, as we saw yesterday, it didn't break any electoral laws. It was perfectly legal, but it wasn't right. And that argument can be replicated many times over as all these people start to use different tactics to gain that vote.
Well, actually, candidates are using that argument for a whole lot of other things now, including premature campaigning. So what we really need, we need to look at the long game. We need to understand that we need to modify the laws now. The pandemic has changed everything. It has changed the game, essentially, and the rules have to evolve to meet it. It'll be a major challenge for the COMELEC to meet these new tactics with the authorities that we currently possess. It'll be very difficult, for sure, but it's something that we need to step up to, especially since the elections are next year, and there's very little hope of any amendatory legislation to be passed in the interim.
You've seen several election seasons, Director, and I remember every single time, ever since I started talking to you, that we would talk about the same thing, right? But how can you expect these lawmakers to do what is right when they eventually would benefit from what is wrong with it?
Well, not to sound too cynical or too depressed about it, but ultimately the solution would be to elect lawmakers who are not, you know, prone to self-serving tactics. You need to elect lawmakers who will look at the problem and say, yeah, I'm going to benefit from this, but this is a problem and I have to solve it. So we need to rely on the voters to select the right leaders in the coming elections.
And talking about the voters, the extension of the registration process, I know it was a very difficult decision for you to make, considering the impact on the calendar of activities of the commission. This now leaves you a little room for mistakes. You know,
yes,
that,
it does.
Right?
Yeah, so, it does. We've basically eaten up whatever slack we had. So, we need to get things right the first time, every time.
And how do you then assure the public that the extension of the voter registration will not be used by, you know, people who are trying to use this to cheat the elections? That idea has been floated as well. And this gives you little time now to verify each and every registrant.
Right. Well, the most important thing really is really to work more transparency into the system, so that people can see that we're not cutting corners, that people can see that we're doing everything the right way. We're going to need to do that moving forward because, as you said, there's very little time left and we really don't have time for do-overs.
All right. There's another thing that you tweeted about. I think it was a couple of days back, the deadline for substitutions. We're still in the early days, right? And the deadline is November 15. But again, looking at the long game here, what should happen when it comes to the substitution of candidates?
Well, a lot of people are sort of like agreeing that substitution should be done away with. But we have to look at it from a different point of view. You have to look at it from the point of view of saying that no one is obliged to run for office, which means that if they change their mind, they should be able to do so. That the political party, which is fielding these candidates, should not be held essentially hostage by that person changing his mind, right, or their mind. So,
but what about using it? But what about using it as a way of mocking the system?
But unfortunately, it's a process that the law provides for, which means to say that the law, at the first instance, really didn't see anything wrong with substitution. Right. So again, if we're saying that we don't like how it's been used in the past, Well, that's fair comment, but that doesn't mean that the system itself or the process itself is intrinsically wrong, because there is nothing wrong with substitution as a principle. It's simply, you know, it can probably be put down to us not liking how it's been used in the past. But how it's been used in the past isn't really a guarantee of how it's going to be used in the future. So again, you have to look at the system itself and the reason why the law put it in place. In any case, Carmina, if it is to be changed, that is a legislative prerogative. That's not something that the COMELEC can do anyway. Mm-hmm. So if Congress decides that they want to change it, by all means, change it. And COMELEC will enforce whatever new laws you come up with.
You're coming to us live from the filing center, correct?
Yes, I am. Sorry.
And how would you, it's all right. How would you assess the first days? We're now a day before the deadline. How would you assess how it's gone so far?
Gone pretty slow so far. Past 6 days have been very slow. We've had some major filers, but not a lot. No, comparing the numbers of filers now to the numbers that we were seeing in 2019, it looks like we still have a long way to go. Mm-hmm. In fact, today is the first day when we've had multiple filers coming in at roughly the same time. And we expect that it's going to get worse by tomorrow.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Spokesperson, Director James Jimenez there, joining us this afternoon. Thanks again for being with us. Take care. Keep safe. Moving on, President Duterte threatening to jail senators if they cite government officials in contempt during their hearings. The chief executive had barred cabinet officials from attending the Senate probe on government's pandemic spending, which he called a waste of time. Senators, however, see the president's threat against them as a bluff. Senator Panfilo Lacson says the president himself knows he has no power to order the arrests of senators. Senator Kiko Pangilinan, meanwhile, calls on Duterte to stop diverting the issue.
Huwag ninyong hayaan na si Gordon o mga senador na magsigaw-sigaw sa inyo. Pariho lang tayo sa gobyerno. At pag ikaw ay sinagawan o kayo ay pinag-iinsulto, stand up o isight kayo in contempt pag nalaman ko
President Duterte also dares senators to challenge his memorandum before the Supreme Court if they think it's unconstitutional.
I want them to go to the Supreme Court. Gusto kong makita ng footage ng behavior nila during. I want it recorded in history. Yeah, it's yung pangyayari sa Senate. How they behave badly. Gusto kong dalhin nila sa Senado, sa Korte Suprema. So itong ano nila, withdraw nila yung order ko. There ain't no way that I will withdraw it. You can do your works. And I will do mine. Kayo ang nag-umpisa nito.
The Philippines reports 9,868 new COVID-19 infections Wednesday. This brings the total number of COVID-19 cases in the country to 2,622,000. 112,000 of these are active cases. The health department again clarifies the relatively low case count was due to lower laboratory outputs. No new deaths were reported for the second straight day, still due to technical issues with the agency's data collating system. Government looking at further easing the capacity for personal care service businesses. Currently, only barbershops, salons, nail and hair spas are allowed to reopen under Alert Level 4 in Metro Manila.
Pero for alert level 4, yung mga iniisip pa ng mga activities na pwedeng i-reconsider, ito po yung mga naiwan pa ng mga other personal care services na as long as meron pong mga safety protocols na ino-observe, ay i-allow na rin po yan. Would be other activities. Kunwari, hindi pa nabalik yung mga therapeutic, mga massage and all that.
In Sweden, authorities are halting the use of Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine on people aged 30 and below due to concerns over its possible side effects. Here's the full story.
The Swedish Health Agency said the country is suspending the use of Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine for people born in 1991 and later. That announcement came after reports of possible rare side effects among youths and young adults, such as myocarditis, an inflammation of the heart muscle, which the Mayo Clinic says can include symptoms that resemble a heart attack. In a statement, the health agency said the connection is especially clear when it comes to Moderna's vaccine Spikevax, especially after the second dose. It added that the risk of being affected was very small. The health agency now recommended the Comirnaty vaccine from Pfizer-BioNTech instead. Some 81,000 people born in 1991 or later had received a first Moderna shot. They would not be getting a second jab. Earlier this week, the Swedish health agency said people aged 12 to 15 would only get the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. The European Medicines Agency approved the use of Comirnaty in May, while Spikevax was given the nod for children over 12 in July.
The first ever approved vaccine against malaria will be formally rolled out in Africa. The World Health Organization made that landmark announcement over a decade after clinical trials were launched in 7 African countries. The vaccine, called RTSS or Mosquirix, was developed by British drug maker GlaxoSmithKline. It was found 30% effective at preventing severe cases of malaria in children. While low, it spells a big difference for Africa, where the mosquito-borne disease has killed far more people than COVID-19.
We've long hoped for an effective malaria vaccine, and now for the first time ever, we have such a vaccine recommended for widespread use. Today's recommendation therefore offers a glimmer of hope for the continent. We expect many more African children will be protected from malaria and grow into healthy and productive adults.
At least 20 people are confirmed dead following an earthquake in southern Pakistan. The tremor was measured at a magnitude of 5.7. It was recorded at a depth of 10 kilometers, with its epicenter located near the city of Quetta. More than 100 homes collapsed, while a large number of structures were also damaged, including government buildings. Europe facing record high gas and electricity prices as markets continue to suffer from depleted energy stock. Gas Infrastructure Europe says gas storage sites in the UK and the European Union are currently at 76% capacity. That's down from the seasonal average of 90%. The shortage are partly blamed on the sudden increase in energy demand around the world as global economies recover from the pandemic. In response to this, markets across Europe have tried to limit demand and conserve stocks by increasing the price for consumers. The European Commission says this issue highlights the need to invest in more renewables.
It is a serious issue. I think we have to be very clear that the gas prices are skyrocketing, and but the renewables, the prices have decreased over the last years and are stable. So for us, it's very clear that with energy in the long term, it is important to invest in renewables. That gives us stable prices and more independence, because gas is imported, 90% of the gas is imported to the European Union. And next week, the Commission will put forward a communication on the energy topic overall, and we will discuss it then in due course in the Council.
And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.